Chan versus Mangialardi. Mr. Selbka.
Good morning, Your Honor. If it may please the court. This is a Section 1983 case wherein Demetrius McCann is claiming a violation of his civil rights. Before the trial court, his only claim remaining when this case came to summary judgment was a denial of his rights to exculpatory evidence under Brady versus Maryland. The trial court denied our motion for summary judgment, and we believe the trial court erred. First, a couple of facts. Otis Moore ran a narcotics trafficking operation in Chicago Heights.
Okay, well, we know the facts. Why don't you move on to
Your Honor, the trial court erred in a couple of reasons. First and foremost, the right to exculpatory evidence under Brady versus Maryland.
Well, I don't understand the emphasis placed on Brady. I thought the argument with Mangialardi framed McCann, which would be something much more fundamental than a Brady violation.
Well, Your Honor, there's no evidence that Mangialardi framed McCann. Otis Moore's testimony sets forth that Mangialardi certainly did not like McCann, and Moore simply stated that he would inform Mangialardi as to when McCann would be carrying cocaine. There was never any agreement to frame McCann. Otis Moore never told Mangialardi that McCann, that the cocaine would be planted on McCann. And essentially, Otis Moore simply told Mangialardi that he would tell Mangialardi when McCann was carrying cocaine. Now, McCann carried cocaine almost every day during this period of time. He was a distributor for Otis Moore. He distributed to street-level drug dealers. And also, he sold cocaine for Otis Moore. Both these facts are admitted.
The day he carried it and was arrested, that was planted. We know now.
According to Otis Moore, it was planted.
Okay, it is enough to get him out of prison, whatever it was.
Yes.
The facts that are not known, at least to me, is when Mangialardi knew they were planted.
Well, that is unknown to anyone. The default admission set forth that Mangialardi did not know.
Well, that's the admission. Now, the McCann says Mangialardi instructed Vares to plant drugs in Alexander's car and have another officer find the drugs.
Yes, Your Honor.
If that's true, that would be framing him. That wouldn't just be Brady.
But, Your Honor, Patrick Alexander is not the plaintiff here. Demetrius McCann is the plaintiff. Now, Mr. McCann, in his brief, goes into other times when apparently there is evidence that Mr. Mangialardi did participate in framing a drug dealer. But in this case, with Demetrius McCann, there is no evidence.
But the inference that McCann would want the jury to draw is that he also was a victim of framing, like Alexander.
But it's not a reasonable inference. It's not an inference based on evidence. The only evidence that McCann relies upon is the testimony of Otis Moore, and Otis Moore makes it very clear that he never told Mangialardi before the arrest that the drugs were planted. Now, after the arrest, Moore says that at some point he did mention to Mangialardi that the drugs were planted, but a few days after the arrest, Moore confirmed that McCann was caught distributing and possessing cocaine. And therefore, there is no inference that can be drawn of a framing in this case.
Well, according to your opponent's brief on page 19, Mangialardi had indicated he believed that McCann was working with the FBI and instructed Moore to get rid of that guy.
Yes, Your Honor, but not using illegal means.
Not using illegal means?
No. Moore then said, well, I'll tell you when McCann is going to be in possession of cocaine. And Moore did exactly that. On November 20th, on 1990, he gave Mangiulardi a call and said, McCann is now in possession and driving with cocaine in the car. Moore used two Otis Moore henchmen to basically set up Demetrius McCann, according to Moore's testimony. But Moore did not tell Mangiulardi that the drugs
were planted. Well, another thing is, at page 20, Moore specifically told Mangiulardi that McCann knew nothing about the drugs.
Yes, Your Honor, but that is not... No one knows at what time that occurred. Moore did testify to that, but
I don't know why a jury... I mean, this is apart from this admissions issue, which is a complication, but I don't know why a jury couldn't infer from Mangiulardi's participation in this drug scheme and his fear that McCann might be working for the FBI that he did not frame him. You don't need direct evidence. You just need evidence from which a jury could draw an inference.
Well, Your Honor, there is Otis Moore's testimony that suggests that Mangiulardi didn't know, and there are the default admissions, which do complicate matters quite a bit.
Now, why didn't the judge discuss these admissions?
I don't know, Your Honor. I don't know why the judge did not take into account these admissions. Certainly, Seventh Circuit precedents say that a district court judge cannot ignore default admissions. In Mangan versus Broderick Rope Company, the Seventh Circuit specifically stated it's error to ignore default admissions. And the default admissions lay out that Mr. Mangiulardi did not know that there were drugs planted.
What do you have in a case in which you have admissions and you have evidence that contradicts the admissions?
Well, Your Honor, the Seventh Circuit addressed that question in U.S. versus Kazabowski. Evidence cannot be used to contradict default admissions. Otherwise, there would be no purpose in answering requests to admit. Parties have to be allowed to rely upon admissions. The purpose of default admissions is to remove issues for trial and for summary judgment. All the Mr. McCann's attorneys had to do was simply to either deny the admissions or file a motion to withdraw the admissions. And they never did that. We were thus entitled to rely upon them pursuant to the United States versus Kazabowski. And in that case, the Seventh Circuit stated that admissions cannot be contradicted by any evidence, by deposition testimony, by sworn testimony, for any reason. They must be taken as true for purposes of the summary judgment motion. The trial court did not do that. Mr. McCann's attorneys don't deny that they failed to answer the request to admit, and clearly the request to admit are relevant. And I would also...
Would you equate the Moore's, whatever you want to call it, setting up or something with McCann, with Moore's request that Mangiulardi arrest his competitors who were clearly committing crime? You're trying to say that McCann was going to commit, at least as far as Mangiulardi is concerned, McCann's going to commit the crime, here's where to catch him, as opposed to having a plan. Are you making that distinction?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Because that's where that key question about when Mangiulardi knew about it.
That's exactly correct, Your Honor. Mangiulardi, according to the default admissions, and I believe according to Otis Moore's testimony, did not inform Mangiulardi that McCann, that the drugs were going to be planted. According to Moore, McCann was in his normal business of committing crimes at the on November 20th, 1990, and Mangiulardi had no reason to believe that McCann was going to be set up using planted evidence as of the arrest and during McCann's prosecution. Now, as McCann was prosecuted, he didn't act like an innocent man. He didn't defend himself at the probable cause hearing. He didn't file a motion to disclose informants, where he knew there was a tip from the arrest report and from discovery. And on January 31st, 1991, McCann pled guilty. He had his lawyer instruct his attorney in open court to say he was guilty.
Now, he said that was because he wanted to get 5 years instead of 30.
Your Honor, the Supreme Court has made pretty clear that when a defendant pleads guilty, He's not saying that the state's attorney can prove his case beyond a reasonable doubt. He's saying he is guilty. And McCann basically said he was guilty in a court of law. And he did not use his right to a trial to defend himself. And now he is coming back to demand that his rights were somehow violated by without taking advantage of the judicial procedures that were in place to defend him, not to mention the state law tort remedies, where if there
is... What would be an example of a request to admit which shows that Mangiolardi did not frame McCann?
I believe...
Because your opponent says these requests to admit are inconsequential.
Yes, Your Honor. Request to admit number 118, numbers 145 to 146.
What are they? I don't know.
I apologize, Your Honor. They're in the appendix. One of which said that no police officer had any knowledge of that the drugs were planted before or during the arrest. Another request to admit said that Otis Moore confirmed to Mr. Mangiolardi after the arrest that the drugs were, and Mr. McCann was caught while distributing and in possession of cocaine. A third request to admit stated that plaintiff has no evidence from any source, that any officer withheld any evidence indicative of innocence. So those are the types of requests to admit that Mr. McCann failed to answer.
Now, McCann says in his brief that he did make some objections in the district court.
Your Honor, Mr. McCann made objections to the uncontested facts on our summary judgment motion. He never objected to the request to admit proper, but he did make some objections to the fact statement in the 56.1 fact statement required by the Northern District of Illinois. He also never objected to the vital facts that he doesn't have any evidence that the police failed, that the police denied him any exculpatory evidence, and that the police did not know at the time. He may have objected to the police not knowing regarding at the time of arrest whether Demetrius McCann was set up. However, he never objected to the underlying request to admit. Mm-hmm. But moving forward, Mr. McCann also had numerous state law tort remedies if this inference that he wants the court to take and the jury to take as true existed, that Mangiolardi did frame McCann. There is a malicious prosecution claim Mr. McCann could bring down the street in the state court. There is a malicious abuse of process claim. There is a false arrest claim. He could have.
It's always true in these cases.
Yes, Your Honor, but under Parrott versus Taylor, if there is a due process claim, an adequate state law, post-deprivation state law tort remedy will knock out a due process claim. Under Parrott versus Taylor and also under the Seventh Circuit decisions in Gunther versus Holmgreen and under Newsom versus McCabe, the Seventh Circuit specifically said that any due process violation would be knocked out by a state law malicious prosecution theory. Mr. McCann doesn't deny that there is a state law remedy. He simply says that he doesn't allege it, and therefore it should not be relevant.
You're saying that even if Mangiolardi, and I understand your argument about the admission and so on, but you're saying even if Mangiolardi framed McCann, there is no federal remedy because of Peratt versus Taylor?
Yes, Your Honor. As long as there are adequate post-deprivation state law remedies for the actions of unauthorized state actors, there is no federal remedy for a violation of due process. And in the present case, Illinois has a myriad of state torts that could give Mr. McCann recompense. Justices Kennedy and Thomas made this point, and in Newsom versus McCabe, the Seventh Circuit adopted this point, that a any state law post-deprivation remedy that will adequately provide recompense bars a federal claim.
And is that a case about framing someone?
That was a case where the police were accused of deliberately denying the defense, I believe, either fingerprint or footprint.
What do you mean, a Brady case?
Pardon? A Brady case, yes, that was a Brady case.
That's a more esoteric type of violation than actually framing someone.
But, Your Honor, the argument is the same whenever... Pardon me, I'm...
Okay, your time has expired. Yes. Thank you. Mr. Boyer?
May it please the Court, would be pleased to talk more about the request to admit facts this counsel has brought up here today. Most of those were admitted by default. We read them. They were true.
What do you mean most of them were admitted by
default? Excuse
me. They were admitted by default.
We read through those. The way those questions were characterized, the way they were worded or phrased, they were true as worded or phrased. The objections we made in the course of summary judgment went to the relevance of those facts, whether they were proper for some reason or another to consider on summary judgment, but nowhere in those requests to admit is there a conclusive statement that Sam Mangiolardi did not do what we claim he did in this lawsuit.
Is it unequivocal based on those admissions that McCann was, when arrested, in the process of selling and distributing drugs?
That question was not asked, nor was it admitted.
What he was saying. I don't have those admissions in front of me, but there is nothing like that.
Well, then,
in the request
what
to admit.
Was Mr. Selke talking about when he said that? One of the admissions was that no police officer knew that that the drugs weren't McCann when he was arrested. That no one withheld evidence.
I don't believe that's in there.
You don't believe what?
I don't believe that statement, as phrased here before the court, is one of the requests to admit. I think the argument the court heard was more akin to a closing argument that one would give to a jury, but it is not one of the requests to admit which were propounded to us and not responded. Perhaps there's...
Well, we can read those.
Look at
yes.
Those.
If I can,
what they say
if I may.
Said.
But I just wanted to address that from the start. We get here to the due process argument, and the primary point I believe that the defense makes here is that this is a malicious prosecution claim, and those under Parrott have to belong in state court and not here. And I would simply put to the court that Parrott does not bar a claim of that nature. That was discussed in Albright. It was addressed. It was discussed in Albright, even by Justices Thomas and Kennedy, in the view of the Supreme Court that this court accepted in Newsom, and that portion of the Albright opinion does not contain a blanket statement, as argued here. It does not. That portion of the Supreme Court's opinion. Does not universally state, or does not state, that all malicious prosecution claims must go to the state courts under Parrott. In fact, the opinion by Justices Thomas and Kennedy expressed reservations about Parrott, and there are two, I would say, and ask the court to keep in mind here. One is that the point made by the court in that portion of the opinion states that it is in reference to arbitrary acts, singular arbitrary acts. We are not talking about that here. In this case, we are talking about a defendant who was convicted in federal court, who did 10 years in prison for engaging in a massive conspiracy of which this is a part. And secondly, even Justices Scott, Thomas, and Kennedy make note of the need of our federal courts to exercise their power where the integrity of this court is at stake. And that is what we're claiming here with conduct like that committed here by Sam Mangiolardi, where in order to protect his own involvement in a massive drug conspiracy, and in order to prevent what he believed to be someone, Mr. McCann, who was cooperating with federal agents, they completely created evidence. He participated in creating evidence, placed it in a car that they knew our client was going to borrow, created the evidence that allowed the arrest to take place, created the evidence that allowed the charges to be filed, the guilty plea to occur, the conviction to occur, and the imprisonment to occur. And all that while, Mr. Mangiolardi kept silent about his involvement. In fact, today, he denies his involvement, even though there have been a whole host of convictions involving his involvement in this act. And I would add, Your Honor, that the evidence we did rely on at summary judgment was an evidence that Mr. McCann or his attorneys went out and got. This was evidence that the federal government, federal prosecutors, put together and presented to a federal court. And that is, the evidence that was obtained from Otis Moore.
When you say all that while, you start from the point where Mangiolardi, and I suppose Moore, want to get McCann out of the picture. He's an undercover guy.
That is soon.
The beginning of it, and then you say the end of it when he's in prison. It seems to me, though, if let's just say that McCann was going to do a routine delivery. Let's assume that that's what he does. And that Moore tipped Mangiolardi off and say, all right, he's going to make the delivery. And they go ahead and do what they did. Is there a difference between that and when the same kind of call came from Moore to Mangiolardi saying that one of his competitors is committing crimes and they go and arrest them and get them out of the picture? Is there a difference?
Yes, as I understand the question, if indeed
committing a crime.
Mr. McCann was engaged in the commission of a crime and carrying drugs as part of a massive conspiracy, then you know certainly this case would take on a different complexion. That is part of the fact questions that
right.
We believe can't be decided on summary judgment.
But I guess when we're talking about drawing the line, at least to me, that line is fairly distinct. And where is it that, let's just say hypothetically, that Mangiolardi found out later that these were planted? At what point does it change to the where it's too late for him to have intervened and done anything about it?
That's a difficult question, and
is it at the plea?
The reason, one of the central core components of this case and this claim is that Mr. Mangiolardi here in this case did not, after the arrest, as part of his normal working duty, simply find out that Otis Moore, the drug lord, set up Mr. McCann. The essence of our case is that Mr. Mangiolardi had information that this was going to happen and knew the reason and consented to it, and he was part of it from the very, very beginning. So
part of the plan. Well, that's a big difference.
That is a huge difference.
Getting McCann out of the picture is not.
That is a huge difference. That is a very big difference, and I would go so far as saying, Your Honor, that therein lies the essence of this case, that the officer was involved at the beginning, he was part of the plan, and we believe we put forth evidence to that effect through the testimony of Otis Moore that was presented by our U.S. Attorney's Office during Mr. Mangiolardi's criminal prosecution. We included part of those transcripts.
Not contrary to the admissions.
May I ask the court to refer me to the admission in question?
Well, look at these. One is, Mr. Mangiolardi never spoke to Ms. Jennings or any other member of the state attorney's office in regard to plaintiff's November 20, 1990 arrest and subsequent prosecution.
Well, that's true. He did never talk to him. Mr. Mangiolardi had this information, and he never went to the state attorney's office and said anything one way or the other. That's true. We're claiming he should have.
Well, what was it exactly you think Mangiolardi did to procure this prosecution?
Well, maybe it's part of the facts that just aren't coming out clear, because the information here wasn't signed off by Mr. Mangiolardi. The information was signed off by one of the subordinates at the Chicago Heights Police Department. So Otis Moore made a call to the police department. It was then referred over to Mr. Mangiolardi, who knew then that Mr. McCann had been set up. Mr. Mangiolardi then instructed one of the officers downstream to go out and start the arrest. And the arresting officer on the scene, who had no idea what was going on, was the one who, he found drugs. But he signed off the information, and then Mr. Mangiolardi, during the course of this whole prosecution, kept silent about it. He never told anyone.
So you really are making a Brady argument.
Your Honor, there's a Brady argument here. There's a Schneckloth argument here. And we believe we invoked both of them, although since Albright, finding exactly where violation as outrageous as this one, where it exactly fits, the
now,
case law hasn't been specific.
What is that about? You wouldn't get any additional damages, would you, if we affirmed, then wouldn't that make the cross appeal moot? That is, what additional damages would you be seeking for the false arrest?
That is another question left open by Albright. By that I mean the scope of the damages allowed under the Fourth Amendment. Certainly we here take the position that was suggested by Justice Ginsburg in Albright, that being, at least on the damages end of it, not necessarily, I don't believe we have to get into the continuing seizure issue on the statute of limitations issue, but insofar as damages are concerned, if this court finds that Mr. McCann has a timely Fourth Amendment claim, which he is entitled to pursue, we believe that that Fourth Amendment claim should encompass all of his damages, because all of the harm he suffered flowed.
Well, I was asking the other way around. What additional damages could he get by virtue of the Fourth Amendment if your framing or Brady claim were upheld?
That would, of course, depend on exactly when the due process violation is said to have occurred. By way of example,
but his damages are the time the loss of utility or what have you, income while he was in prison, right?
Certainly, the vast portion of his damages arose from the time of the guilty plea, the time of his initial imprisonment, through the time of his discharge from prison, which took approximately 2 years. The Fourth Amendment claim could then, at least in theory, encompass his damages from the time of the initial arrest up through perhaps the early portion of the conviction. The part where he entered into the guilty plea, although he did not spend much time in prison during that time.
Let me go back to just one of the request for admissions, number 145. According to Otis Moore, he did not inform Sam Mangiolardi or any other officer of the Chicago Heights Police Department that drugs were planted before or during the arrest.
Otis Moore did not say that to Sam Mangiulardi.
He came to Mangiulardi by someone else other than Norm Moore.
It came through a discussion between... I'd have to check the facts on that, Your Honor. It's in Otis Moore's testimony. But the discussion that Otis Moore had with Sam Mangiulardi didn't say verbatim, "I'm planning drugs." It was much more subtle. But there was a discussion, and that is part of the federal trial transcript. There was a meeting, and there was a discussion.
But here you agree with this statement?
With that plain statement, yes. With that statement as characterized, we do.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Selfka, what time does he have?
Your Honor, I wanted to discuss Albright versus Oliver.
I think you exaggerated what those admissions, I didn't look at them carefully, but I think you exaggerated them. I mean, just the one that Judge Kaney just read, according to Moore. Well, that's just a request for an admission that that's what Moore testified to. That's not a request for admission to the truthfulness of what he testified to. Most of your admissions are prefaced by things of that sort. Plaintiff denies, or defendant denies, Mangiulardi denies, according to Mangiulardi. Those are just efforts to make clear that we're all, you know, arguing from the same record. But I don't see anything in which the request is to admit that no police officer knew about this planting of the drugs and that no one withheld evidence?
Your Honor, if I could direct your attention to page 92 of the appendix, request to admit number 177. In regard to the November 20th...
Wait a second.
Pardon me, Your Honor.
Okay, 177, yeah.
In regard to the November 20th, 1990 arrest, plaintiff has no evidence from any source that Sam Mangiulardi or any other Chicago Heights police officer withheld any exculpatory evidence from plaintiff, the state's attorneys, or plaintiff's attorney prior to the date when plaintiff pled guilty on January 31st, 1991.
Well, what about subsequent to that day?
Apparently, Otis Moore may have testified that he did mention...
I mean, it wouldn't matter, would it? I mean, it might affect his damages, but if the day after, he spent 2 years in prison because no one came forward, so...
Your Honor, the Seventh Circuit has addressed this issue in Reddick versus Haas. There must be a knowing use of perjured testimony during the prosecution, after a conviction or a guilty plea. The fact that Mangiulardi may have discovered some exculpatory evidence, that there's no constitutional requirement for him to come forward under Reddick versus Haas. Now, if the court wants to change that, then Mr. Mangiulardi is entitled certainly to qualified immunity.
Is that your best admission, 177?
I'd say that is one of the good ones, 145.
Is there another good one?
145 and 146 are...
What do they say?
That's the one I read.
Those are the ones that Judge...
But they're according to. They're just about the evidence that Moore gave. They're not a ratification of his testimony.
Yes, Your Honor, but Otis Moore's testimony is all the evidence they've got. That's it.
But there's no dispute about what he testified to. That can't be a matter in dispute.
Then there's no evidence that...
But that has nothing to do with admissions. That just has to do with what he testified.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's all they have for evidence.
But that has nothing to do with admissions, right? What he said is what he said.
And what he presumably will say throughout.
But that has nothing to do with the admissions.
Yes, Your Honor, you're right. It's what he testified to under oath.
Right.
But there is no other evidence that Mangiulardi knew.
That's a separate point. If you're right there, that's a powerful point. I just just a question of what significance these admissions have.
And Your Honor, finally, I would just point out that Albright versus Oliver sort of prohibits this finding of a due process violation simply by a bad act. There must be a specific constitutional provision that is violated. The court, Supreme Court in Albright versus Oliver, prohibited a substantive due process violation stemming out of criminal proceedings. There has to be a specific constitutional violation that is found.
And okay. Thank you, Mr. Boyer. Next case for argument.